This podcast contains explicit material. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to The Joy of Text, a podcast about Judaism and sexuality. In this mini episode, Rabbi Linzer will be sharing with us a text for us to discuss.
So the text I chose for us is actually one from the Torah, not from the Talmud or from the rabbinic literature. And it's one of the earliest narratives in the Torah, which is the story of the creation of woman from man. And it then speaks about the declaration, the poem that Adam, the first man, says, right? The Torah reads, Alken Yazav Ish, or the sort of the narrator voice in the Torah says, Alken Yazav Ish et aviv et imo v'davak bishto v'hayu lebasar echad. Therefore, a man will leave his mother and his father and cleave unto his wife, and they will be one flesh. I think that this is really a powerful and fascinating text from a number of perspectives. One is, and probably this is not the first thing that occurred to you, but in having read all of the sort of, you know, rabbinic literature and the assumptions of a patriarchal society, which you also see in the Torah narratives, it's usually the woman who leaves her parents to come and live with the man. So first thing that always strikes me in that text, the man leaves his parents' house to go and cleave with his wife. That's just strange right there. I don't know what to do with that. But then the other point about just talking about the sexual union, right, to become one flesh, to become a greater whole. And the simple sense, of course, is that one flesh here means the way the two bodies merge in the sexual act and they're seen as one greater whole. And that really speaks to the power of the sexual act of bringing two people together. The physical act, the intimacy that is created through that is really a way of so powerfully in terms of connecting two people. And that's something that we've talked about a lot. You know, it's not just about pleasure seeking and so on. It's really the profound, you know, bringing together of two physical bodies and of two souls. We know, of course, later the Torah refers to it as yidiyah, like knowledge, intimacy. But it is interesting to note, and that's the way the Ramban reads that verse, but it is interesting to note that, for example, Rashi reads it in a very counterintuitive way. He says the one flesh is the child that will come through that union. And that child, their two fleshes will be brought together because it'll be the product of the two of them. And, you know, that represents a different approach towards the act of sex, that the primary purpose of the act of sex is procreation. And it isn't just the sort of the bringing together of man and woman, of husband and wife. Ultimately see sex as something that's not as much of an intrinsic good, and it finds its value through the children that result. And of course, it is true that in, you know, the early stories in the Torah, while it keeps on saying, you know, Adam knew Chava, his wife, so-and-so knew so-and-so, his wife, it's all, the next line is always, and she became pregnant and bore, you know, and they had a child. So it raises somewhat out of that interesting question about, is it about the man and woman, you know, and just their coming together, or is it ultimately about the progeny? So some thoughts about that verse.
So it's so interesting. Two things. So you said, you know, usually the husband, the wife goes to live with the husband, but you know that old saying, right? A son is a son till he takes him a wife, but a daughter is daughter the rest of your life. So it's sort of the same idea, right? Your daughter stays your daughter, uh-huh. Right? Am I getting that right? But your son sort of really becomes the woman.
He
becomes very dependent on the one. Like, he creates a new family, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. She sort of takes daughter. I'm not defending that position. I'm not defending that position. I have two sons and a daughter, so I'm not, but I just was thinking that as you were talking about it. The other thing I was thinking about a little bit is, I love that passage. Love that passage because it talks so much about the power of sex to bring two people together. But as you were talking, I was thinking maybe I'm just reading it with a 21st century lens. You know, I want so badly to think of sex as being valued highly because it has the capability of bringing two souls together, but maybe that really wasn't the initial intention. And that,
why do you think not? Don't you think
Rashi,
that is a simple sense? But don't you think Rashi's a forced read of that?
Well,
is there a hint in that verse that it's referring to procreation and children and so
because
on?
Because I think if you think very literally, very literally, then children kind of makes a certain amount of sense, and the Rashi was probably responding to that. And that we, in a romantic era, have looked at it and said, no, the obvious meaning is that it merges two souls. You know, it's like that Browning poem, you know,
I thought
two souls merge as one. I would like to believe that that's true, but as you're talking, I'm thinking, like, maybe it's us putting our 21st century lens on
you're
it.
You're right. It's so interesting that you don't know, like, where is the objective vantage
correct.
Point? Because I assume the Pshat is clearly, like, the Ramban, and Rashi has problems with sex, so he has to reread it as to being about procreation.
Okay, so, Raina, you come in.
You decide.
Well, I guess as you were talking about this, my pastoral alarm was going off and saying, well, what about couples who can't procreate? Does that mean that they're not coming together as one just the same as couples who can?
Right.
And I think that the obvious answer is no, that's not the case. Of course, they're still coming together in that sense. And I don't know, I guess I love both ideas, except a part of me is just really sad to make it all about procreation. There's something beautiful about that being the one thing that, you know, the one flesh that comes from two fleshes. But there's also something very sad to me when we make this text very procreation-centric and take it away from the beauty of sex and the beauty of two people coming together. So I guess I'm hoping it's both, kind of romantically.
It's like the politician, what's your favorite color? Plaid.
Yeah.
I do think it's really worth noting also that while in the mitzvos part of the Torah completely acknowledges the reality of a polygamous society, right? And a man having multiple wives and so on. Here, we're almost being presented as like an ideal, which is very much one man, one woman, two parts of a whole that are coming back together. And, you know, it's also interesting to reflect on that, that sort of the mitzvahs of the Torah could reflect societal realities and navigate those societal realities without necessarily saying that they're intrinsically good, to hold this up against, you know, the legal parts of the Torah and see this as sort of modeling what an ideal type of a relationship would be.
I think it's also interesting to just think about the other characters in Bereishit who can't have kids and who are polygamous, and that maybe this is an ideal that's getting set up, that ideally this is the situation, like a monogamous relationship where someone's able to procreate, and if not, then you can go outside of that to have children. But it's just interesting to know that this is set up, and then our avot are people who are struggling, or an imahot are people who are struggling with these very issues.
You know, that is so fascinating, because I'm thinking that when you deal with the barren women, that their sense of not being whole is their inability to have children, right? That Sarah says, take this woman and I will be built. So she is not fully built up. She is not fully whole. And if you think about Hannah and Elkanah, so he says, you know, aren't I better for you than 10 children? And she's barren. She's like, no, I still want children. I need children. So actually, that's interesting in a way that sometimes you see that the man might feel whole because of his wife, but the woman, sometimes in these narratives, does not feel whole without children, which I think is interesting.
I think we see that very clearly with Sarah, when Sarah is the person who goes out and gets Hagar for her husband.
Right, exactly.
To give him that wholeness.
Exactly. You know, I think while we're talking about sort of this as an ideal, it's also important to not let the romanticism undercut the realities we sometimes deal with. I think sometimes people are told, you know, you'll find your bashert and you'll become a whole person, and, you know, now you'll be, it'll be totally transformative. And, you know, God willing, that happens, but I think usually to lesser degrees than sometimes the romantic notion that we have. So I think it's interesting to think about balancing this idea that you're only partial and you become whole when you get married, and then, and that completes you, to A, people that find an ability to be whole without being married, even, and other people who are married, and it's not, you know, completely transformative. I think, again, it's interesting to think about what holding up this sort of ideal and romantic notion, the power of it, but sometimes the challenge of it as well.
Good. Thank you. If you have any questions for the show, you could submit them anonymously at www.thejoyoftext.org. The Joy of Text is produced by Jewish Public Media, which is supported in part by a grant from Next and Natan. This episode was recorded by Mike Hurst and edited by David Svi Kalman. You can listen to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or with any podcast app. My name is Raimi Smith. Thank you so much for listening.